This is episode 4 of Art House Rewind, and we're excited that you're here. My name is Matt, and today, over the World Wide Web, we are joined by Brian Oestreich, our creative director, and Jake McKenzie, who is our operations director. Thanks for joining me tonight, gentlemen. Excited for our conversation this evening. Today, we are talking about Three Identical Strangers, but before we do, as always, we want to shout out a couple things. First and foremost, Art House Cinema and the Babcock Theater continue to be supported, even in the midst of this shutdown, by our sponsors. So we just want to say thank you to those businesses, organizations, and individuals who are choosing to sponsor Art House. We want to continue to give shout outs and say thanks to you. And tonight, Brian, who is our sponsor that we want to specifically shout out?
Tonight it is This House of Books, who have been great sponsors to us, and you know, always a good thing to do right now, especially while we're in quarantine, to go check out a book.
And then Brian is doing a nice little reminder about what he's drinking this evening as well. Brian, do you need to shout out anything that you're drinking?
I mean, we always got to do a shout out. So tonight, in celebration of doing Three Identical Strangers, I am drinking a Belgian triple from Thirsty Street. This is their super beer that I'm drinking tonight.
Their super beer?
Super beer.
I love it. And Jacob, how about you?
I am also having Thirsty Street tonight. I am a sucker for this hazy that they have on tap. It's called Hops Matter. So I was excited I was able to get a crowler of it for tonight.
I love it. So everybody out there, please do your part and do what you can to fill a growler or anything by some of our local beverage makers. They are continuing to do a lot of work, and hopefully we can continue to support them through all of this stuff. All right, gentlemen, tonight we talk about our very first documentary when it comes to Art House Rewind, Three Identical Strangers. Mr. Oestreich, what do we need to know about this film?
You know, this is a pretty straightforward, easy one. This is Three Identical Strangers, came out in 2018, and it was directed by Tim Wardle, who has done a couple other TV documentaries before, but, you know, this is really probably his biggest project to date is this. It was also written, and with documentary, usually written is sort of a loose term, but it was written by Grace Hughes Hallett, and she also, you know, hasn't done a whole lot of other things as well. It's just, yeah, these are kind of new filmmakers, but, you know, definitely made a great film out of this really amazing subject matter that's kind of stranger than fiction. So.
Yeah. So obviously, when it comes to the starring section of the film, there's no real actors or anything like that, even though this film does, I think it does a beautiful job of using kind of the three elements of documentary storytelling. You've got certain sections that are reenactments, certain sections that are historical footage, and then certain sections that are just live or to-date interviews of them talking about the subject. So even though there are actors in the film, we're not necessarily shouting out who starred in the film. But I think they do a good job of interplaying all three of those things. Originally, we brought this film when it first premiered nationally, and we were so excited to have it at Art House. This was one, for me, that it originally played at Sundance Film Festival, and we had kind of heard about it and saw some trailers for it, and there was some buzz about it at Sundance as from, you know, us as Art House watching what was happening. And we were excited, really excited to bring it to Art House because the trailer, if you haven't seen the trailer at all, go check it out so you know what we're talking about.
But this film, we just played it before this live cast. Oh. So.
That's right. I'm sorry. I forgot about that already. Yeah. it's quarantine brain is what we call it. Yeah. That's what's happening. So anyways, the trailer does a great job, I think, of building some anticipation that this is a crazy story and you just want to see what this story's about. And so that's where we were as Art House. This film overall is number 18 as far as box office for us here at Art House Cinema all time. So our 18th most popular film that we have played here. So without further ado, we're going to first jump into our spoiler-free zone. This is the section where we're going to talk about some things that if you haven't seen the film, we're going to do our best not to spoil anything for you. But full disclosure, this film has a lot of twists and turns that I don't want to spoil anything for you because that's part of the beauty of the ride of what this film is. So this section might be a little short as we jump into the spoiler zone, but spoiler-free zone. Guys, anything on production tidbits or anything that we need to know about this film, spoiler-free wise?
They are making a feature film on this story. So I always think it's inspiring, or at least you can tell it was a great documentary, or it really inspired other filmmakers when, mm-hmm. you know, it's like a documentary then goes to a movie. So there's a feature film that's planning on coming out relating to this story.
Do we know who's directing it or starring in it or anything like that?
I can't remember the director's name. I did look it up before this, but
if they get Ryan Gosling to play all three brothers, that I think I'd see that.
Yeah,
three identical Goslings, I think, would be a great, great film to check out. One of the things for me that I find, this isn't really a production tidbit, but, you know, this film, I think, is really documentary making at the highest level in a lot of ways. Not only is the story crazy, so, you know, some documentaries do well just because of what the subject matter is, that, man, this, you know, whoever tells this story, you're going to be enraptured because the story itself is just crazy. This film has that to it, but I think for me, the way they go about telling this story, and, you know, I just referenced the three different elements of reenactments, historical footage or pictures, and then interviews, like the way they splice the information and lay out the story, it's for me, again, it's just documentary storytelling at the highest level, that they knew that this is where we're going to start. And then we're going to introduce this piece of information, and then we're going to introduce this, and then this piece. And they're truly telling a story. This isn't just a fact-finding mission of a documentary. These are storytellers that are working their best to tell this story in the absolute best way possible. So for me, I love this film because of that. I find it crazy that it didn't get nominated at all for Academy Award for Best Doc. Ultimately, Free Solo won, which is another film that we played at Art House. Maybe we'll do a rewind on that eventually. So I am happy that Free Solo won, and I think Free Solo was great. But I just think, from a documentary standpoint, this film is so, so, so well done.
Yeah, absolutely. And it mixes several styles with not only just the talking heads and the archive, but it does get into some reenactments as well, which, you know, always kind of heightens that, where you can see things, you know, reenacted and played out in a way that,
I think they reenact them well. Like, for me, when I think about reenactments, I always go back to those high school, you know, boring documentaries we had to watch in class, that it was just someone, you know, it's like just poor production quality, you know, it's just something, mm-hmm. they needed to show something on the screen rather than a talking head the whole time. So they just, you know, dress somebody up like the character, like, you pretend to be this, you know, that kind of thing. They did a really, really great job of, you know, even when they talk about the car that he drove, you know, and the way that they shoot it in a very cinematic way. These reenactments, it's not just putting a camera down and, you know, paying some, you know, bottom grade actors to pretend to be something. You can tell they care about telling the story through the reenactments as well. It never felt cheesy or cheap to me, the reenactments, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Any other production tidbits? Anything, guys? Because I know there's a lot before we jump into the spoiler zone. There's a lot to talk about, I should say.
Not a ton for me. Like I said, very well done documentary, but nothing specifically I wanted to point out on this one. So.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to jump into what we call the spoiler zone, or the spoiler talk, because it's about to happen, where we talk about some of the twists and turns. So if you haven't seen this film, this is your warning. You can check it out on Hulu if you want, and then come back to this. But gentlemen, let's talk about some of our favorite scenes or best moments within this film. What worked so well? So,
Jake, you want to start out?
Sure, I'll start this one. So for me, I think something that I enjoyed, especially rewatching the film, was the way the director and the team was able to get the female assistant for Neubauer, and the basically like grad student he had working for him at the time, to be part of this. And, you know, like I said, this one helped with multiple watch throughs, because the first time I watched it, I remember thinking, wow, these people are evil. Like, how terrible. And the second time I watched, it was like, a little more empathetic of, you know, they were in a research job, or they didn't say, you know, they say they didn't know, that kind of thing. It's like, you know, there's such a forbidden fruit there with the ethical dilemma that I kind of enjoyed that they were able to get those weigh-ins to the situation.
Yeah, and one of the things I found fascinating is when the filmmakers kind of set out to tell this story, they didn't actually have those contacts. They didn't know that those people were going to be able to be out there, but they truly did kind of some investigative journalism in the midst of the film, discovered these people, approached them, and was able to do that. And then some of the historical footage that they have from the actual case studies, they didn't anticipate being able to have any of that at all. But because of these connections and these interviews, they were able to get some of them. So I love their willingness as filmmakers to kind of go with the twists and turns of what was presented, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess if I had to, I mean, obviously, I think one of the strongest moments, and you kind of see it coming for a long time, because for the first, 45 minutes to an hour of the show, you know, you're seeing these talking heads, and you realize that one of these triplets is missing, and you wonder what the story is with that. And of course, you learn later in that he committed suicide. And you know, the way that, you know, just the recap of that, and really making that feel real in the way that they talk about how he didn't come into work, and, you know, his wife calls, and he sends her over to check on him, and then she says, "You need to come home." Like, everything about that kind of unfolded. Obviously, like, I mean, it's very sad, but it was, you know, it was effective for me, at least. I found it very, you know, again, you kind of knew it was coming, but still hit really hard when you hear that that's what ultimately happened to him.
See, this is probably my lack in ability to watch a film in a proper way sometimes, because that was a surprise to me. I didn't even realize. I was so into the story and the twists and turns that I didn't like do the math and like, oh, we've only heard from two of the twins. Where's the third one? Now I talked to a lot of people in the theater after we showed it at Art House, and a lot of people were like, I was waiting for that because there was only two twins. So they were doing the math when they were watching it. So
right.
I'm just saying, I'm not like you, Brian, that I was like, what? You know, yeah. And then I had to go back in my mind, like, did we ever see him? Like, where, yeah. You know, that kind of thing.
Although, because to be fair, I mean, there are times too where, like, you know, sometimes people just choose not to be part of a project. Yeah. Like we just showed Once We're Brothers, and Robbie Robertson kind of leads that story, but there is another surviving band member that just chose not to be part of the project. So
yeah. Yeah. So I think that, to go back to kind of your broader point about that concept, their ability to tackle the issue of mental illness, it's not necessarily a tangent that the film takes forever and ever and ever and ever, but it's definitely something that they sit on for long enough to give it meaning, I think, is that's what I hear you saying, at least, is that they told it in a meaningful way, and they told it in a way that I think not just mattered to the story, but mattered to the cultural impact that mental illness is in some ways. So, I agree. I thought they did that really, really well. Absolutely. So for me, my favorite scene or moment has to be, it's about, I want to say, like 40 minutes in, half hour in. And typically, just so everybody knows, we work hard to find clips that we can show what we're talking about. But for whatever reason, there isn't just a lot of clips out there to show on this film, which probably is okay, because then things aren't spoiled for you if you haven't seen it. But for me, it's about a half hour, 40 minutes in, when they introduce the journalist, and he's talking about his work that he's been doing with these triplets and studies and all these kinds of things, and kind of the big reveal that it wasn't just three identical triplets that were split, and then that's the end of the story, but they were split on purpose. And there was a purpose behind not just the splitting, but where they were placed and how they were placed. And the true kind of underbelly of this film is this study around nature versus nurture that was taking place. And the reveal of that, I think is done so well, because it's not just bump, bump, bum, and then they say it, but they go back and they like give clips that we've watched in the film, this first half hour of the film, and you're putting all the pieces together as you're watching these clips, like, oh, from a poor family, a middle-class family, a rich family, like all of a sudden you as the viewer are able to kind of investigatively journalize or investigatively seek out or put the pieces together and say like, oh, yes, I figured it out. You know, I just think the film does a great job of revealing that kind of stuff to you and helping you feel like you're figuring it out with them as they go, even though they already had all the information before they put this film together. Right. I think they did a great, great job.
So. Yeah. So there's an AMA on Reddit, which is an Ask Me Anything that their director did. And so I read through that pretty heavily after watching this movie again. And somebody asked that question. They said, you know, why do you show the same six historical clips or whatever it is so many times throughout the movie? And he said, no, it was very purposeful. Like, we had a lot of footage to show of them, but I wanted you to realize those clips meant different things each time we played mm-hmm. them. And so I it's really powerful that, you know, the first time you watch it, like, oh, wow, this is fun. What a great story. These triplets found each other. And then, you know, the differences and the similarities and the health issues and the, you know, everything that kind of the different parts of the story, you get more out of it. Like you said, figuring it out. It's almost like watching like a heist movie where it's, they go yeah. back and kind of tell you like, remember when you saw this, like, is it clicking yet? Like, so.
Yeah. They leave breadcrumbs for you. Like even the, you know, the third brother not being there, obviously, you know, they leave these breadcrumbs for you, and it's just an incredibly wild ride. And like I said, just, I think documentary filmmaking done at some of the highest level from a storytelling standpoint, period. I think it's incredible.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's an incredible subject matter in itself, that it, you know, really lends itself to making a great documentary too. And that, I mean, yeah, they struck gold with their subject matter as well.
Yeah, and I think that, so, I mean, their willingness, and this is what I said earlier, by the filmmakers to kind of follow the path that where the story was taking them. Because at the end of the day, I remember watching the trailer before this film came out, and I was just excited to watch this, like, oh, three people looked exactly alike and they didn't know they were brothers. That's crazy. And that was kind of enough for me. That was enough to get me in the door and see the, like, from a storytelling standpoint, they could have focused so much of their time and energy just around that, on the restaurant that they opened and the tension that they had, you know, when the restaurant wasn't working anymore and those kinds of things. But they didn't. They let that be a piece to it, yes, but they allowed it to go deeper into these bigger questions. And for me, why the film works so well, the bigger questions of nature versus nurture and free will, and as we talked about, mental illness, you know, the concept of organizational reach or oversight on human beings, or just scientific ethics, and, you know, that like, I did not sit down to watch this movie to think about any of those things. I was just there to watch three guys that looked alike, that didn't know each other, and like, now they know each other. And I'm
absolutely. And for a lot of people, I mean, you and I are too young to know. All three of us are too young to really remember when this happened, when they first found each other and were on the Donahue's and the Today shows and all those things, desperately seeking Susan and those things, like, you know, those things, you know, when I researched this a little bit, I saw a lot of people saying that, you know, oh, I went into this and it was sort of like a recap of what I already knew. And for me, it's like, well, I didn't even know that. So
there was a lot of information out there already on the studies. I mean, I know some of it was, but from a national narrative
for study, more that. Just that the triplets found each other. But as far as the studies and the, you know, adoption agency things and that, those were things that people didn't expect going into the documentary. But I know several people older than us remember when this actually was a thing on talk shows and that. And it was, kind of being able to hear the rest of this story and hear that it's a little darker than just, you know, the restaurant and the Studio 54 and all that stuff. So.
The movie with Madonna.
Yeah,
that's right. There's a movie with Madonna. Yep. Yeah. So Because I remember that. Like, there were some people that didn't actually want to come see it at Art House when we showed it. And the reason they told us was, oh, I've heard about that. I've seen that. And at that time, I was like, oh, that makes sense if you've seen the news story. And yeah. It's always fun for me to see Donahue, just because that reminds me of my mom. I just feel like she watched a lot of Donahue. She probably didn't, just not thrown. But I just so that kind of stuff, it makes sense that it hit this cultural kind of impact at the time that we definitely missed, because it was not a part of Ninja Turtles. There was no Ninja Turtles storyline that any of us were able to catch up on what was happening there. So, gentlemen, jumping into nitpicks, any nitpicks that you guys would have for this film?
I think it's hard to keep track of everyone. Like, they did a really good job of, like, you know, they'd show the little nameplate.
Is it because everybody looks alike? Is that the problem, Jake?
A little bit, but then figuring out who's related to who. So as far as, like, you know, they all have a set of step-parents, and they all had friends, and they you know, there's a college roommate, and there were, you know, that kind of thing. And it was hard to keep track of, okay, that's Bobby's wife. Okay, that's, you know, that's Eddie's wife. Okay, like, you know, that's their friend, that's his sister, you know. So to me, if it could have, and I know that makes it almost like one of the specials on ID where they come back from the commercial and they re-show everyone's name, but I had a really hard I had a hard time keeping track of who and was they, who. And
they made a point of pointing out that one was from more of an affluent family, one was more middle class, and one was more lower class, and I never really pinpointed which one ended up where.
Right.
I kind of had to read about later when reading about Eddie, who committed suicide. I was kind of curious, like, which family was he? He was the middle class.
Middle class.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on that, Jake. I think they did an okay job, but for me, that is something that happens a lot in documentaries, that they'll show the name card once, and then the rest of the documentary, you're expected to remember that. Sometimes that's easier than others. This one has so many players and so many twists and turns and introduction to new characters. I think just to make the statement of whenever somebody's talking on the screen, just have a name card of this is who this person is and how they're connected. And even, who knows? Again, they did an incredible job with this documentary, but some sort of family tree to see, like, oh, they're with them and they're with them, you know, as some documentaries can visually represent that information. There was a lot. I'd have to agree with that.
So, I don't know. I mean, again, this is nitpicky, but there were some things that I think the documentarian tried to play up in certain ways that maybe didn't have the payoff that they were expecting. And part of it, I think, is just in building suspense. But the whole, I don't know, halfway, well, not halfway, maybe 30 minutes in, they talk about the parents all meeting with the adoption agency to say, why were they separated? And they have this meeting. And then after the meeting, one of the dads goes back to get his umbrella that he had left in the office. And when he goes back, everyone's toasting each other and stuff. And he was like, well, this seemed very sinister. And to me, I was like, that felt a little forced that they, I mean, obviously there was something sinister, but I feel like they were trying to make his memory of it seem more sinister than maybe it was at the time, because we have no reason to expect there was anything sinister behind toasting after this meeting. There may have been a myriad of reasons, just like if we would have, you know, been showing a film at Art House and then someone came down to our offices and we're all having champagne. There's no reason to think that it's because we're doing anything sinister. It's just, you know, sort of a thing. So I don't know.
To me, that felt a little like, and then we toast.
Yeah. That's, I mean, yeah. So, but, I don't know. I felt like they tried to play that up a little bit more than it was. And of course, I mean, it ended up meaning something in the end, but I feel like even in the moment that may not have been that significant. And I can't think of other specific examples right now, but there were times where I felt like they tried to give greater impact to certain moments.
I think they definitely do that when they kind of force the, like, you know, the strong father role like that whole section after Eddie's, that to me was very forced, like kind of just shoved down your throat a little bit of like, better be a good dad or, you know, this will happen kind of thing. And so that to me was another area that they forced like that.
Yeah. You always wonder with, documentaries, what's being communicated on the other side of the camera. So, asking a question of what happened when you went to the adoption agency, they tell the story and then, you know, the leading questions of how did that make you feel? Was there anything uncomfortable? Was there anything, you know, like you just don't know. Yeah. And so you really are trusting the documentarian as much as you're trusting the person that's being filmed to work towards some sort of level of truth rather than trying to, you know, squeeze all the juice out of a story so that you can tell the story you want rather than what happened. I didn't feel that, Brian, personally. So I disagree with you a little bit, because that for me was one of those scenes of like when I watched it the first time in particular, I didn't think anything of it. I just thought like, there's something happening here. He went back in to get his umbrella and noticed that like, why are they toasting? This is weird. And then left. And this is just, you know, where I was. And then it was back to my favorite scene when they did the recap and they tell it again. Then it was like, oh, snap, you know, that kind of thing. But it took that recap for me to feel that. It didn't feel forced when I first heard the information. So just for me personally, that's where I would be. For me, my only nitpick, and this feels pretty broad, but I think every single time, so this was the third time I've seen the film. I think every single time that I've watched it, the third act, basically the last third of the film, it kind of, it just slows down a little bit for me personally. There's so much happening in the first two thirds. And then with Eddie's suicide, that taking place, that's such a huge, heavy, dramatic moment in a lot of ways and matters so much to the story. And then they just, they go into the father bit, you know, they do a lot of different stuff potentially at the end of the film, but none of it feels to have that dramatic weight or twists and turns and aha kind of things that the first two thirds had for me. So not to say that it needed to just be an hour long film, but just the last third of it just kind of, I felt like by the end of it, there was just this repeating cycle of how could they, why won't you, how could they?
And they would talk to other subjects. They would talk to that one guy that did the studies on them, and they talked to, you know, these things, and they kept it felt like they were trying to get answers, and in the end no answers were really to be had, and so it felt a little anticlimactic in that sense too, where they're fishing for these answers but they don't have them. So,
well, and I love that the film ends and then there's the card, information communicating about, because of this film, they've released information on the triplets, that they can see it. It's heavily redacted. There's not much there. And then there's like this final scene at the end. And it just feels like, okay, so they did what you wanted to do, but what did it do? Like, what did we learn? What did we figure out? Like, if it's just a graphic, because the whole thing is filmed already, I can understand that. But like, so you're saying there's nothing in there? Like, it just, again, that it just felt like I really, and this is kind of maybe jumping into what does it all mean on some levels, but I just really felt like there were so many big questions that they were asking and doing such a great, great job of it, that they just, it was just this revolving door of the same things over and over and over again, for then it just to be like, yep, see, all these questions, see you later, get out of here, rather than working to point at anything of like, anyways, so.
So in the AMA that the director did, that was one of the questions is, you know, what kind of happened, you know, you just have this slide that says, you know, 10,000 pages, heavily redacted, and the director said, like, it was a thing of money for them. So at the time, they were out of money, and they were trying to figure out, you know, they were already pretty much in the editing of the film at that point. And so they could not, you know, short of doing another hour long bit for the film, they couldn't do it. And they are a UK based team. And so they were flying to America for all of those interviews with their whole team. And so they were completely out to do those things, but they wanted to wait until they had viable information from the documents. From what he said in that, and that it was done about a year ago, there wasn't any conclusions to the study that they could find.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which I think does play into it a little bit, probably, that this amount of, for lack of a better term, trauma took place in the lives of who knows how many people for nothing to be found. Or,
right.
You know, I can get that. And this is nitpick, everybody. I do love the film. I think it's a masterclass of storytelling, as I said. But for me, I just wanted more out of that third act. So, Jake, you had mentioned something about, because this is probably the third time I saw it, the first time I had this conversation or had this thought around the murder that took place.
Yeah.
And it's like just this throwaway line almost, or throwaway scene. You're like, what? And maybe that's, you know, that third act, it's in the third act that it comes out. And so for me, I'm like bracing for like, oh, here we go. This is happening. And then it's nothing. What was that for you? And what did you find out?
Sure. So as I was doing my online research, that seemed to be kind of one of the hotter contested things about the documentary itself, is that the director chose not to dive into this as kind of a side alley. And again, when he was asked about it, he kind of referenced not having the time and that, you know, the brother was acquitted on the trial. But reading into it, they have the court documents available for that murder trial. And it's pretty gruesome. It's pretty telling. It's pretty evident that he was an accomplice to murder. And so it's a crazy read. It is out there on the internet if you want to go look it up. But it was interesting that, you know, that's kind of the hot topic for this documentary, is why the director chose to just avoid that, or at least make it seem like it was just kind of a dust off. Like, yep, we talked about it. There he goes. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, another thing they didn't really talk about in the film, but in research I learned, there was a fourth brother that died during childbirth, which, you know, I don't know how much that really adds to it other than to just feel sad. But
right. But yeah. So there was a person on there that was talking about, so it's impossible to have the split zygotes without having four. And so whether it was just flush in a regular, you know, gestation period, or if it was, you know, something that happened later in utero, but that it's impossible to have three without having the fourth.
Okay.
That helps, because my wife, she sat in when I was watching it. She'd already seen it, but she watched it, and she's a physician's assistant and works in labor and delivery, along with another department at the hospital. But she was watching it going, wait a second, you know, so that makes sense why she was having thoughts that she was having. She was like, this just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. But if there was four, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So that's good to know, gentlemen. Yeah. So
no plot holes in this one.
We figured it out. So this could be a really, really long conversation for me. And so you guys are going to have to rope me in. What does it all mean? And so I'm going to just throw out those categories again, because these are the things that came to my mind when I was thinking about what does it all mean. There's the nature versus nurture conversation. Yeah. There's the question of free will. Is it a thing at all in our lives? Mental illness and what's brought about because of the different choices that are made for us. The reach of organizations and information and privacy and what that means for our lives. And just because an organization, a board of directors that's continually referenced throughout this film, they get control over information about you. And then just scientific ethics. Those were kind of the big categories for me. And things that every time I watch the film, I think about and process. You guys, what do you think?
I think those are all things that they're trying to have you think about. I don't think there's any one thing you can say is the main theme of this film. It definitely is a cacophony of all of those. And
was there one that jumped out at you more than others when you watched it?
You know, I mean, for me, it's probably more the mental illness aspect, but I mean, I definitely can see a case for everything else, simply because, I mean, especially nature versus nurture is probably the stronger theme, but, but you know, some things just speak louder than others. So,
yeah. Jake?
For me, I think what I take away from this movie is that, you know, there's that ethical, scientific, forbidden fruit that, you know, like you said, there's major corporations behind this. They really, if we can better the human race from the knowledge of this study, you know, why is it so locked down? Why is it so tied up kind of thing? And so there's that, like, is it okay because it's not me? Is it, you know, is it not okay kind of thing? And so that's a really tough one that I watch this movie sometimes and I think, oh yeah, like absolutely, that's going to be fine. And other times I watch it, I'm like, nope, like that would suck if that was you and you were separated and basically a lab rat. And especially, you know, the end credit scenes is the actual footage of their testing of when they did the home visits. And to me, that's the, like, the gap too far. Like, it's just, it's a crazy, crazy dilemma that they had to go through to be like, yeah, that's a good idea, let's do that. Especially being, you know, more than likely the generation that escaped Nazi encampment and had similar testing done there. So to me, that's a crazy, crazy part of the story to just sit and process about throughout the night.
Yeah, I think so. For me, it's probably, I mean, the nature versus nurture is definitely, I think, the strongest narrative that the film continues to present. It's, you know, and so I think that that's a strong piece and I think really fascinating. Again, not anything I sat down to watch the movie and thought I was going to have this conversation about. But the scientific ethics is probably the one that I continue to come back to over and over and over again. And it's just, you know, they reference it in the film that it was the '50s, you know, like it was the, you know, when it came to psychology, it was the Wild West and people were just doing, you know, lots of crazy stuff. Nobody was asking too many questions and it was okay. Like we can understand and point at it now and say that's not okay. We shouldn't do that anymore. But it was the '50s, man. You know, I can understand that, but it's that underbelly of in the conversation around scientific ethics that, you know, for me, it was probably the most impactful of okay, science, good science would potentially demand that we put some sort of blind testing in place to be able to really ask these questions. Is there another way to be able to answer this question of nature versus nurture?
There's not.
No. Probably not. So how scientifically curious are we? And are we willing to go through this and put someone through this potential harm for the sake of our scientific curiosities?
Right.
And so obviously this film, I think, continues to communicate and definitely lands on the page of it's not okay. This was not okay. How could they? But you gotta back up. And so where is that line then? And when is it okay for us to no longer do this? And I definitely don't live in this realm. I know some scientists that, you know, had some conversations about this. That's, I think it's incredibly fascinating. And even for me, now, this is probably something, a film that we're going to do a rewind on, but like when I watched Apollo 11, when we had that last year at the Babcock, like here's another, on some levels, scientific ethics, our willingness to put humanity at so much of a risk and our willingness to spend so much of our resources on this, you know, process to get to the moon. And I remember talking to some engineers after we had watched the film, and they said, yeah, it's never going to happen again. We're never going to do that. Now, I'm not trying to say that that's the case because there's things happening, obviously. But just that idea of we're going to do everything we can for the science of it and to advance the science. It doesn't matter. We're going to do this. We're going to do it as safe as we can, but we're just going to do it. And how much culture and in some ways science has changed that we're really not in that place anymore to take those kinds of risks. And this film kind of reminded me of it, like, what else are we going to do to discover this nature versus nurture thing? Because I don't think we're in a place to take these kinds of risks, and the ethics have changed for the good, for the better. Please hear me. I am arguing that. But I think that was the thing that I just kept coming back to. Where is that line and who gets to determine that line? Is it just culture? And we're going to be in 2050 looking back on things that we did in 2020 and be like, come on, you guys, seriously, you did that? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, and even the woman that was an assistant, I mean, she really kind of played up how she was much more a background character in this study. But, you know, towards the end of the film, she even says, you know, when everyone's saying, like, how could you do this? We need to let everyone know that this happened. And she brought up, like, you know, there's two camps to that. There's people that say, you're a monster. You need to, you know, reunite these siblings because they deserve to be with their family. And then other people that are saying, or it's, you cannot tell these people, it would destroy them. And I mean, there's a bit of that too, where it's like, you know, person to person might differ, that some people might say, no, I definitely need to know. And some people might say that I don't need my life destroyed. I'm perfectly fine the way I am. So.
Yeah, for sure. So when you think about kind of exploring this any further, gentlemen, anything that comes to mind if you want to go deeper on this concept or conversation?
So I kind of touched on one. I think there's a couple of things. The director obviously did his little tour and answered questions, and more of the studies has come to light, or at least been available to the public. So if you do some searching around on the Google machine, you'll find some good stuff out there relating to the studies and what was kind of found or not found and some of the redacted statements, that kind of thing. Also, the female twins that are featured in the movie, she is the author of the book, and I believe it's called Identical Strangers. And so if you are interested, that's a book that kind of jumps into the process. It will be, you know, it's predated before this movie happened, and so they don't have as much information as the movie, say, did. Because I feel like this is one of those things that as those twins are finding each other, more and more kind of gets released to the public of, oh, yeah, like, here you are. You're right. You were part of it, kind of thing. So,
And I think it's the last line of the film, the research assistant communicating, there's at least four people out there that are twins and don't know that they're twins. So who knows what's going to continue to come of it. There is a podcast. So this film is co-produced by CNN. And so CNN produced a podcast out there. I think it's 6 or 7 episodes, something like that, that does a good job of talking about more of the scientific conversations around the film rather than just the, whoa, can you believe it? Story elements of the film. So if you're interested in that, whatever podcast app you're on, just search for Three Identical Strangers. And that's the name of that podcast series. So I found it helpful and interesting for sure. Yeah. So gentlemen, anything else as we wrap this puppy up?
I don't have anything extra to say. I think, you know, that's one thing, a testament to this film is that it gave out so much good information that it kind of left me at a struggle of what else to talk about. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that, so it was a great one. So I watched it the first time at the Art House and then last night rewatched it with my wife, who is very into, you know, her crime scene dramas, that kind of thing. And so we stayed up pretty late last night, just kind of going through. The director did a great job of just leaving these like strings. And it's like, oh, I'm going to pull this thread. I'm going to go off in this tangent. Like, what did you think about this part? Like kind of thing that are not related to each other. And so it allows you to kind of mentally process a movie almost like a book when you're done watching it, of like, wow, all those different avenues of it challenged thought in different areas for sure.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think as we try to do with most of our films here at Art House, stir great conversations through great film, art, and culture. So I think this is one that does that. So gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me tonight. On Friday, we're excited because we're going to be doing this for Hunt for the Wilder People, which for a lot is their favorite film that they've seen at Art House. So I'm excited to be able to discuss that and have a special guest in tow for that one as well. So hopefully everybody can join us for that. So I hope all of you gentlemen have a great night, and anybody watching this, thanks for tuning in. Hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye guys.
Bye.